Hello and welcome to Illy's Coffee Talks. Season 3 is going to be about all my favorite topics, including slow living, inner work, entrepreneurship, creativity, spirituality, slow traveling, and health. I am Ophélie Cabanero, your host. Enjoy the episode. Good morning, Johanna. Thank you for finishing your hike to come on this podcast this morning. A great start into the day to go for a hike.
Thank you. Yeah, when I also, you know, there's two things to it that we could probably say. One is the kind of, for me, it's the preparation to actually get into a space where I'm kind of open to the conversation. And the second thing, so for those of you who don't know, I actually messaged Ellie about 40 minutes ago to say I was going to, we're supposed to meet 11. I said, I'm going to be another 10 minutes. But I also, that's another talking point to say, that is also very much a sign of my own healing, that I took the time to go for the hike. And, you know, I took that space because the old me would have been like, no, I'm taking the shortest walk so I can be on time. I'm not going to take the time for myself. However, I don't, obviously, I like to respect the boundaries and be on time, but it also just shows you the difference in the work between, you know, taking the hour walk and just getting home and being there and actually taking my time, knowing it's going to make me more present for the conversation.
Yeah, I have probably three different things I want to add or ask from this. Yeah, you did that because you knew that's going to make you feel good. And also you posted, I believe today, that you like to go for a hike to prepare you for something like the workshop you're going to host later this month or maybe this podcast now.
Yeah, well, I hike more or less every day, or I at least walk. So it's a practice in itself. I also have a big hunting dog, so he needs the walk. And it's also become part of my practice, like a walking meditation, if you like. But it's also me, it's many things. It's me connecting with nature. It's me connecting with myself. And a big thing is me being held in the nature. And as I work with more and more clients, there was this repetitive narrative of them having this call to be in nature, but they didn't really, you know, understand why particularly, apart from that kind of quietness or just getting away from it. And what I understood after a period of time was actually that they were looking at a place, you know, for a place to be held within. And nature is one of the kind of safest place for us instinctively to feel held on a greater level. And, you know, this amazing dog came into my life and it kind of forced me out into nature, which then, you know, I always say my son came to break me open, my daughter came to remind me who I was, and my dog came to walk me home, you know. And since, so he's going to be 3 in April, come this summer, that have been 3 years that we've been walking together. And, you know, in the time we've walked together, I have, you know, recovered so much of myself. And becoming is very much about recovering your truest nature, your essence of who you are. And there's no better way that to do that than one, just immerse yourself in nature. Because when we're in nature, especially when we're on our own, we take on our own natural pace, as opposed to the pace of the rest of the world. You know, we tune in. It's just like it's an organic thing. We are human beings. We're not doing so when we're there, you know, we're part of nature. I think people forget that we are part of nature. So when we're immersed in it, it's kind of like a natural thing that we then go back to our instincts. So yeah, so to go back to what you were asking as well, when I hike, I kind of set an intention. Either I'm like, today there's no headphones, there's no podcast, there's no chatting to anyone, and I'll walk because I know I need that. There's another kind of way where I'm like, oh, I know I have something coming up. And I've understood that my kind of creativity flows when I'm walking, it's kind of like, you know, with the, you move things when you walk. And so today my intention was for the workshop that I'm holding on the 16th, and it all just came to me, it flowed to me, you know, because my kind of, it's a bit like when your hands are busy, you know, when your legs are busy, when you're walking, things just flow. So I've, instead of kind of torturing myself for 3 days in front of my laptop, mm-hmm. I've walked for 2 hours. I now have more or less the framework for how I'm going to deliver the workshop next week, you know, and I think that's the thing which I've had to really learn, because, you know, this is very much part of my own journey, but I get anxiety about something. I'm like, oh, I've got this something up. Like mm-hmm. I find it difficult to plan things, or if there is like something planned in, I get anxious about it, because I'm like, oh, I only have this much time, which means I have to kind of force my creativity to get that ready, you know, and maybe it's not going to be understood. It's not going to be, you know, there's one thing it being in your head, there's another thing it being out in the world. And perhaps sometimes it's really hard to bridge that gap. So when I walk, things flow to me, and I'm like, that's true. That's my truth. That's what I, the truth I want to put out into the world.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Yeah. Creativity for me, it comes when I'm reading another book or when I'm doing something else. And then either the idea, it's a similar idea, and then I maybe disagree, or and that makes me write about it. Or one part of my brain disconnects from what I'm doing at the moment and then just daydreams, and then the idea, and then I can go on my laptop. But I also don't force myself to sit down and try to come up with something. It just doesn't work for me.
Mm. Yeah. And I think like there's a whole conversation that could be a whole other episode as well about what creativity is. Obviously, you know, it's expression of ourselves. I think personally as well, I've learned that it's very much an expression of, you know, it's really the truth, but also the truth of the way we see the world in that moment from our perspective. So it's like, you know, when we talk about creatives and how creatives work, and, you know, when you're coming up with ideas, it's very much a question of perspective. And it's like, well, I see the world in this way, this is my truth and the moment, and this is what I have to say about it, you know. And then so, you know, when we hold back our creativity, basically we're holding back on saying, this is how I see the world, this is my truth. Do you see what I mean? Just when you were saying about, you know, if I read this book, or that's very much about that kind of prompting and also remembering. So, you know, so when we, you know, it's the kind of inspiration of, you know, I see a lot of inspiration about remembering something that you deeply know, or it's remembering a part of yourself that you'd forgotten. There's a whole, and also creativity is a need. We have a need to tell our truth. And I think people forget that creativity is actually a need. And that's why often, you know, I see a lot of women coming to me, like 95% of them, they actually get physically ill because they're not creating. They're not meeting that soul need.
I love it. I just listened to a talk from Elizabeth Gilbert that she gave at the School of Life on the 2nd of January. Mm-hmm. It was a kind of a workshop. And, well, I could say what she said, but I also believe that creativity is healing for us. Mm. You know, once we express it. I also read The Unicorn Space by Eve Rotsky. Did you read that?
No, I'm going to note it down.
It's not the whole title, but I can find it.
Okay.
It's, but also, I think
you're right as well, because when you say, you know, when we're creative, it's healing. But that's also, you know, when we tell our truth, it's like a relief. That's why it's healing, because it's like, you know, I put something that was inside me into the outer world. And then it's a question of acceptance and acknowledgement for what it is, and the kind of way that we heal, as it were, is to not search for that outer validation of, is it good enough, you know. But there very much is that sense of relief when we release something from us, from our inner, that we feel that is true. And that's often what I find with, you know, I don't know if you know, but you know, I've I've painted for many years. I'm an artist, like, at heart as well. And, you know, when I was creating art, you know, I went through different phases of what it looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't so much a question of, is this good enough when I put it out? You know, if for me, it was like, it's not true enough. Like, I know what how it feels, what the painting should feel mm-hmm. like, but I can't get it out. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look how I want it to. You know, it was a question mm-hmm. of vision, but it was more about, it's not true enough.
Mm-hmm. To yourself. You
know? Yeah, yeah.
That's super interesting. My husband is an artist. I will tell him he said that.
Yeah, be interested to hear what he says.
Yeah. So Elizabeth Gilbert in that workshop, she, you know, we also talked about it with this new year. It's not actually like new year with nature is more in the spring mm-hmm. or astrologically, it's going to be the 21st of January.
Yes.
And not now. And I felt that a lot. And I was like, not angry, but just bothered by all the things I saw on Instagram, like Happy New Year, what are your goals for this year? And I know you said a similar thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Elizabeth Gilbert says that basically the way you live is an expression of creativity. And it's not necessarily having to produce something. And I always want to produce the best thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And she said, for example, one was it that you were actually, she asked, and she gives an example of her life. She babysat, you cannot say babysat, but she dog sat a dog for a year or something. And she knew exactly how to behave with dogs. And one day she was on the highway or something, and the cars had to stop because there was this little dog running around and everybody was trying to catch him and nobody could. And she was like, first not doing anything. She thought, I'm going to stay in the car and just wait and see what happens. But then the dog ran towards her, and then something clicked, and she was like, I know exactly what to do. I was doing that for a whole year. And she caught the dog, and she thought, yeah, life trained me for this specific moment. Mm-hmm. And then she asked us, when did you accidentally, were you at the right time at the right place, you know, mm-hmm. and you could help someone or see something beautiful or whatever?
Because we forget that timing's divine. You know, we've been that's what we're just saying about the kind of, okay, it's January, we have to make goals. But that has complete, you know, you've completely forgot about the fact that timing is divine. And what you were saying about what she was saying, that's what I teach in my course Back to You, very much about a way of being in the world and restoring your presence. So I firmly believe, you know, because, you know, when we get onto this journey, as it were, which is called, you know, in the wider realms, self-discovery, I call it self-recovery. You know, it's always like, okay, I need to find my purpose. I need to search for meaning. That's what kind of people start this journey with. You know, mm-hmm. when you go on a spiritual journey, it's like, mm-hmm. I need to find my purpose. Now, I have a whole different narrative on that. But what I will say with regards to what you're saying, what Elizabeth Gilbert said, I believe our purpose in life is to restore our presence.
Mm.
And then we find a way of being purposeful in the world. And that changes throughout our life as we grow, as we learn things, as we have experiences, you know, and whatever life throws at us. So if you look very much at the analogy of a garden, you know, we don't grow the same things all year round. You know, and the purpose of looking, you know, when we have a garden, the purpose is to look after it, to do all the groundwork. And then throughout the year, it's like, okay, we know more or less the seasons, but we can't predict the storms that are coming. Mm-hmm. We can't predict if there's going to be a frost just when things are flowering or, you know, whatever it is. And it's the same for our human experience. We know more or less kind of, you know, how our life goes out, our routines, you know, the kids go to school or we go to work or whatever it is we do, sorry, the dog wants a treat. But, you know, we can't, I knew you would do this, we can't predict those big things that are going to come at us. However, we can do the groundwork and expand our capacity and take care of ourselves so that we are strong enough to weather those storms. And also we can learn a way of being in harmony with those changes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes. So it's very much about cultivating a life in which you can navigate it with more ease. You know, so you are rooted to weather those things.
That's what you were saying about you had to bring the dog to the vet this week.
Yeah.
And it threw out your schedule completely.
Yeah, I've had several things over the last few weeks. And if I'd have planned a lot of things over the last few weeks, I was like, this is how it's going to go. Mm. I would be a very disappointed person at the moment and nothing would have lived up to expectations. But I'm going into my 15th year of this journey now. And this is my work, as in, you know, it's not just like a lot of people do this work, but then they also have a completely different job. I'm doing this work and it's also my work to support others mm-hmm. through it. So I know now... But I don't make specific, okay, to extent I make plans like, okay, we're going to have this podcast today at 11. But, you know, I do it roughly and then I don't put deadlines to mm-hmm. them. You know, I don't be like, okay, but this day, otherwise we failed. Mm-hmm. You know, because if you keep doing that, what basically happens is you're putting unrealistic pressure on yourself and then you're constantly... never enough, or it's never good enough. Whatever you put in, it's just nothing's ever going to be enough. You're always going to feel like you're falling behind in some way, or that you're never going to get there.
This is exactly what I've been thinking since fall last year, because I was very much into all this manifesting and all these things. And then since fall, I was like, wait a minute. and this is also what Liz Gilbert says. She says, yeah, but if you go into this, you need to find your purpose and put so much pressure. And then you miss out those little moments. And if you jam pack, she doesn't say that, but I agree to what you said. If you jam pack your schedule, there's no way you're going to have a synchronicity on the street. Like the other day I was... leaving a voice message to a friend and I just see her while I was leaving her the voice message. So
and a big sign of when you are healing for those people perhaps further along in this journey is being able to be spontaneous again. That's a big thing. You know, when you can start being spontaneous, then you're actually leaving room. And actually, funny enough, I've just left a voice message to a friend of mine and she was asking, you know, I was asking how she was, and then she asked, well, how about you? And I said, you know, where I was and my intentions, kind of how I'm stepping into this year. And I said, what's nice is that, you know, I've left a lot of space or room, one, just to be, but also because I'm not looking at any kind of newness or anything for at least the next few months. So I'm like, I've got space there. If something comes up, maybe I'll embrace it. Maybe I won't.
Yeah, same. I'm trying to write a book about creating space. So, and I've been.
It's like claim it, own it. You know, and I think because when we say that, you know, I'm trying to write a book, or you know, it's kind of like then you're putting a time limit on it as well. You know, it's like, it could take you 5 years. I've already, you know, I've got 3 book titles there, which I'd like to get into. I've got outlines. I've written some things, but you're going back to like 2 years ago. Last year, I didn't do anything. This year, my intention, once a period of time is over, I'm going to get back into it. So again, it's that kind of, no, I'm doing it, but I'm doing it in my rhythm, in my pace.
Yeah, it's all about, you know, it's so much about productivity. And I felt so bad when, because I started to write on the 24th of December last year, well, 2 years ago. And I was like, shit, I'm not done yet. You know, it's been a year. And then I really had to let go of that deadline I put for myself.
Because again, and that's what I'm saying, it's kind of that, you know, things, so we could put in place a deadline or a goal or whatever it is, but we're not leaving room for the life that happens. But also the biggest thing is the emotional experience we go through as life unrolls. So, you know, last year, beginning of the year, we lost my father-in-law. And nothing prepares you for that emotional experience. There recently, my mother's been in hospital, something came up, you know, I have obviously have a complicated family history, you know, and I've learned certain ways of, you know, dealing in these situations, but it can mentally affect you and emotionally affect you for a period of time. And you don't know how long, you don't know how long you need to give yourself, you know, and that then it affects your focus, you know, and when you're in that kind of emotional state, or you need to give yourself time, you cannot then create, because you're not open, you're not, you know, open to the newness, you're not open to that clarity, because everything's become foggy. You see what I mean? So you're automatically going to lose a day, 2 days, 3 days. You know, with the grief, you lose weeks and months, because there's a whole knock-on effect. And that's what these kind of goals and deadlines don't leave room for. And, you know, it's totally an inner work of then having to work against that narrative and take that pressure off, you know, of something's got to be done by a certain time. And if I'm not doing it in a certain time, then I'm not actually doing it. You know, it's not actually happening. Yeah. But it's the same, like, again, we refer to nature. You know, I've had, like, for example, I had pepper plants that were, you know, I planted them at the time that, you know, in theory, they were supposed to go in the ground. And they just didn't thrive. But I said, I'm going to leave them there. I'm going to see what they do. You know, and I left them through a season. Now, at a time of year when there shouldn't be anything on them, it's got loads of peppers on. You know, so some things you've just got to, like, give it time. And you've got to see, okay, a big thing of this is noticing. It's noticing what needs tending to in the moment. It's not because somebody's told us that at this time of the year we have to do this thing and this goal, you know. And that's a big thing I also have with kind of, you're talking about Instagram and coaching and, you know, these kind of template ways of doing everything. It just doesn't work for everybody's way of being. That's, you know, true. And it's, yeah, and there's no one kind of leaving room for say, okay, well, that's just not going to work for me, you know. And I always say this journey is very much about rebelling. You have to rebel. You're one, rebelling against the system, and you're also rebelling against yourself, because the biggest journey is obviously me against me, you against you. So many things we can dig into.
Yeah, but it somehow makes me think of this message you sent, or this, what did you know, it was a story you posted about resistance, because you also said that you wanted to, do you think resistance is also rebelling against yourself?
Okay, resistance is many things, and it kind of manifests within us in many ways. There's obviously that thing of, you know, repeating those patterns. But it's actually, like, for me, it's a feeling, like, even if I'm talking about it now, I've got this feeling that goes from, like, my belly button up to my throat of it's a sudden, like, tightening of, like, you know, and this is often what stops people healing as well, is, like, you know what you need to move through something, but you won't do it for yourself. Yeah. You won't either, or you won't give yourself what you need. You won't give yourself that break. It's so much about just being, you know, when people talk about self-compassion, that's really hard to understand when you're in a state of needing this work. Like, if you said to me before about self-care and compassion, I was just like, no, that's not what I need. Or it just doesn't resonate with me with any way. It's the same with joy. I mean, I detested the word at one point, because I was like, I do not feel happiness. I don't feel joy. It's not in my physical, you know, my body makeup. You know, when you go through this kind of spiritual journey and you look out there to the kind of mass of light workers and everything, it's like, follow your joy, follow your bliss. But it does not mean anything when you're in the dark. It doesn't mean anything, you know? So what I say to a lot of my clients when they're in that stage, it's like, what brings you relief? Because it's a healing journey. It's like anything, you know, if you've got like a broken arm or a cut or something, you're not going to be like, just think of healing. Yes. Okay. But it's like, what's going to bring you relief in this moment?
Yeah.
I think I've gone off on a tangent there, but anyway, I often do that. I can't remember when we started there.
Resistance can be
resistance,
many
that's
things.
The thing. Yeah. So, and I think it's that, like, it's the resistance to, you know, the communication thing. It's also, you know, when we're in this story, we often feel so misunderstood. So that's that thing of like, no, you're not getting me. Like, you're not getting me. But the thing is, with this journey and the kind of game of life, as it were, is that you've got to understand yourself. You've got to hear yourself. You've got to see yourself. And then you've got to not ignore yourself. That's what healing is, basically. And it's doing the work to understand the worth in who you are and what you have to share with the world. You know, it's really getting to that point where it's like, I now care more about me and what I think of me than what you think of me, you know, and standing up for yourself and standing up for what you have to share with the world. Because often, you know, if you are deep in this work, you're here to make change. You're here to change the perspective. You're here to enlighten in some way and shed light on something that was in the dark before. And it's yours to share. It's yours to recover, to reclaim and put out into the world.
Thank you. So to come back to the, you were taking a writing course, I believe, or you wanted to log
in
to something.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
That was the example.
Yes, I know what you're talking about now. So basically, yeah, going back to books and the writing. So one of my intentions, as I said, was to carry on writing the books. And last year, I mean, bearing in mind, it took me many months to go, I'm going to commit to this. I'm going to commit to this writing group. And, you know, and you kind of get to stages where you can actually be proud of yourself for things, which obviously is unheard of, you know, for previous versions of myself. I was like, I'm going to give myself the space today to write without any agenda, without any expectation. So I logged on to the platform where I'd signed up for this membership. And she basically, she was kind of keeping the space open, but there was nothing going to be active within it. You know, and I immediately thought, oh, okay, so what does that mean? Like, does that mean I shouldn't then be concentrating on the writing?
Yeah.
You know, it makes you question yourself, because it's like, you know, I was so enthusiastic about it and it really felt deeply aligned for me. It felt like the space I wanted to be in. And, you know, I could have taken that such a bad way. I could have been like, okay, well, F it, you know, I'm not going to do this anymore. Obviously, I was on the wrong path there, made the wrong decision. But now I'm like, okay, well, I have to see, you know, okay, well, how is this working for me, in the sense that maybe there's someone else who's going to be more aligned with me and bring the kind of truer words out of me out there, you know, who's going to, is finding another way. Or maybe this is on me and very much about my own discipline, my own self-worth, and actually going, you know, I'm going to do this for myself on certain days or whatever it is.
Basically taking those things that happen not as a sign, as we might have done in the past. I also always think of, is this a sign that I shouldn't do it, or that I should do it, or whatever? But be like, okay. Let's keep going.
Yeah, so when you talk about in terms of resistance in that way, that's what we're talking about. So when you're going near something that's truer, you will get more of that resistance. It's a bit like, if you think in terms of digging, like, you know, when you're going into the soil, you've got like the top soil, which is often easy to move. And as you go deeper, 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 deeper into that dark, you're going to hit some rocks. You know, you're going to hit that firm soil, which is going to be harder to break up, to remove. So, you know, at the beginning of this journey, when you're first healing, you know, you are vulnerable, you are fragile, but as you go into it and your worth is building, your capacity to hold things, you know, is expanding, you know, you have more in you to be like, you know, no, I know my worth now, and I'm going to do what it takes to share my story or to tell my truth, whatever it is.
Do you sometimes experience physical pain as resistance? to something?
Oh yeah, I've had, I mean, as I said, like most of the people who come to me, they've had some kind of chronic health problem, or, you know, part of their body is like physically broken down. Like I had my very much my, I mean, I'm here because of the physical health journey I went through as well. And, you know, there was so much to talk about even there, because, you know, there's so much emphasis these days put on, you know, how we feed our bodies, what food goes into our bodies. And I'm totally like, you know, I grow my own vegetables. Okay, I don't feed us with all the vegetables, but, you know, what we put into our body, we are what we eat. But, you know, and we talk about this in holistic nutrition as well. There's different types of food. Now, when we talk about the soul, your hunger will lead you home. You know, it's all about nourishment. What is your soul hungry for? And then it's a question of not denying your needs. You know, it's like, okay, my soul is hungry for X, Y, Z. Well, you're going to have to listen and not ignore it. And so actually what we put into our body is, it's called a secondary food. Primary foods are all those things that make us feel enthusiastic about life and make us forget eating, you know, and it's the company we keep. And, you know, so there's got to be a dance between all of those things. That's why we call it holistic. You know, you have to get the whole picture. So, you know, I've had various health problems throughout my life. However, before I was obviously in my kind of healing state, they would be ignored, or I would push through, or, you know, it would just be lived with, or I didn't realize the extent of it, I didn't feel. But then, however, I did my training for health coaching, and then I went into a certain way of eating, because, you know, it was a kind of, you know, we're taught that every way to eat is unique. However, you know, there also is that kind of conversation around clean eating. However, if you have a problem with your gut, which is, you know, it's all connected to the nervous system, stress, et cetera, there's certain ways of clean eating that will actually make you sicker. And so that was another huge learning journey for me, where I actually got really sick, but it highlighted a lot of the problems which were already there that I was ignoring. Because I just, you don't know what you don't know. And, you know, I firmly believe that the soul will kind of more or less force you to your knees for you to listen.
Yeah.
And I see this time and time and again. So I know it's not just a, you know, a thing, a coincidence. The physical body will kind of break down to let the soul kind of speak, as it were. The whisper becomes a roar. So, yeah, I've had chronic health problems, and now, you know, my work is about the emotions. So I feel the emotions very, very deeply, and that always manifests very physically.
Because I experience also stuff in my body, and sometimes I can recognize it as resistance and something that I have to then deal with. For example, a very common example is when I have time to write, and I know I'm gonna do that, my body's gonna come up with some flu symptoms, and I'm gonna be like, oh my god, do I have COVID now? And no, it's because then it's 6 p.m. and for me the work day is over at 6, and then no flu symptoms anymore. So it's really strong resistance symptoms. Or when I did stand up comedy a couple times on stage, and then my back, so I've had back problems for the past 4 years and most of the time I'm fine, and then the day before I will do the stand up, I cannot straighten up, all these things. And actually it came again this weekend in the mountains. My friend read the first 4 chapters of my book and gave me really great feedback. I couldn't straighten up when I got up that chair.
I can tell you why for this. So much of that is about you not acknowledging, accepting yourself. Now, I know that sounds really weird, because it's like, well, what's like physical pain got to do with that? Because it's just something you're going to kind of have to have faith in me and trust me, because it's a pattern I see time and time again. It's from my own experience, bearing in mind this is like my 15th year in now. It's like, I don't know how to explain it to you, but it's like you're not accepting that work yourself. It's like you still want to hide away. Your physical body is still kind of like, no, I'm going to hide you away. It's like a physical reaction. Do you see what I mean? Yeah. And the more work you do on telling your truth, but to yourself, not just to other people, about who you are, and the truth you have to say. So it's like in that moment when you're going to do your stand-up comedy and you start to feel ill, it's like, what's the truthful, most truthful thing I can say to myself in that moment about how I feel and why I feel that way, you know? And then you kind of go into that realm of, okay, well, how can I be compassionate with myself in that moment, you know? And then it's like I was saying to you, like at the beginning of the conversation, I know if I've got this workshop coming up and then the launch of my program, that puts a sense of pressure on me, but it's also a kind of necessary thing to make a business work, to make life work. You know, unfortunately, you know, I'm not in a situation where I am just kind of living out in the weird self-sustainably. So that puts already a sense of pressure. I'm at that stage of my journey now where I trust myself enough. I trust my guides enough and I trust the universe enough to know that if I now, like I did this morning, do what is compassionate for me and to take care of myself, and I put my hiking boots on and I go out to the mountains, it'll come to me, you know? So it's like having that faith. A big thing is faith, that when you get on that stage, you're going to be held, you know? But until you start accepting the truth of who you are, you know, well, I'm that quirky woman, I have a lot to say, like I am funny, I've got a dry humor, whatever it is, you know, I've got a certain way of seeing the world, and I know that a lot of people don't say these things, but it makes people laugh when they actually hear them. If you accept that about yourself, because probably you've got a whole narrative saying that what you have to say is not funny or it's not important, but you keep doing it because you know in the moment you do get a response. You know, when you start to do that several times and you start to build your faith and your trust that it will come, things flow much better. But it's a practice, you know, that's why we call it practice, because you have to practice being that person and you have to practice your faith and you have to practice the trust.
And when do you think, because I believe that, and for me, there is a maybe a fine line that sometimes resistance show us things that we need to work on. Like, for example, for me, for writing the book. But sometimes, do you think that the body shows you symptoms when you should not be doing something?
Oh, totally, totally. But it's that, that's what we kind of call that, when something feels off. You know, it's like, but so many people just ignore that. You know, I'll just do it anyway, or I'm not going to listen to that. There's always, I mean, your body's communicating with this in so many different ways. But there's also that kind of thing of, you know, if your body is out of whack, as you call it, you know, if your nervous system is all over the place and you're constantly in that kind of survival mode and fight and flight, and you haven't calmed any of that down, you're going to get a lot of mixed messages as well. You know, but I definitely, your body speaks to you for everything, but it's all through the emotions. You know, our emotions are a guide on this journey, you know, and there's a lot of people say, you know, come to me and they've been to therapy and stuff, and they're like, oh, my therapist told me like not to, you know, I was too emotional, you know, and then they come to me with great relief and they're like, oh, I'm not mad. I'm like, no, you're not mad, you know, and then they're like, okay, well, I've done 6 months of therapy, and you know, in the few weeks I've been with you, I've made more progress, because there are guides.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I'll ask you about the guides in a moment. What psychotherapists tell people, I've heard friends telling me like, oh yeah, but my therapist said that and that, and I would never say that to a client. And I'm not trained 5 years or 7 years or whatever, but I know this is like basic knowledge. Yeah. Or intuition or whatever.
Or it goes against human nature, basically.
Yeah,
exactly. You know, why do we have emotions in the end? Why do we have them? You know, if it's not to tell us things, to communicate, to guide us, what do they serve?
So what about the guides? Do you want to share about that?
Yeah, I can share about guides. So guides is very much like, okay, so there's various things. Like, there's our kind of our inner guide, our inner wisdom. That is kind of, I don't know, what's the word in English? We say maîtrise. How do you say in English? I've got the word. You know, when you govern it, when you govern your kind of inner guide. Yeah, you master your inner guide. That some say it's kind of like these levels, you know, that is more governed when, you know, you're kind of building your self-worth. You know, you're like, okay, I know this about myself, and I know that this is, you know, and you get to know what's good for you and what's not good for you, and what you need and what you don't need, what nourishes you, what doesn't nourish you. You know, this is all part of the journey and the learning process. And then you've got that kind of connection to the spiritual world. Now, I had a big year last year of recovering a certain faith. Now, I went to schools and colleges and things where I was basically, you know, part of the schooling was you turn up to church every morning, and it would be, I don't know, 20 minutes, half an hour, there would be hour services, there would be, you know, every day. But, you know, at that age, and then when it's kind of like part of your schooling, you completely switched off, or at least I was. There was like, okay, you hear things, yeah, you know, the stories, you know, the thing, but there's no, it's just like a chore. It wasn't like anything, you know. And then at home, there was no kind of spirituality or religion or anything. So I never had that sense of being held on a greater level. Mm-hmm. Either there was no sense of faith, or, you know, and because of my, the way my upbringing was, like, I didn't have that sense of safety at home either. So then again, I didn't have that sense of safety within myself. You know, I didn't feel safe to be myself. So I can't really kind of tell you like when it started exactly or how it started. There was the kind of spiritual awakenings, which we can talk about more, but it was a gradual thing of understanding that, you know, I did have a connection with a more spiritual world. I was held on a greater level. You know, I was being supported by my spiritual guides. Yeah, so last year was very much actually like, how can I practice this faith? How can I practice feeling held? How can I actually ask for guidance? Because that's the other thing, like, how often do we actually ask for help? You know, and I know my own journey, I know myself, and I know the women I work with, I'm not going to ask for help because we've never had the help. We've never had the support. We've never had that safety. We've never had anyone to go to, or we felt like, this is a big thing as well, we should be able to cope, you know, or our feelings are not valid. Like we shouldn't, or we don't have the right to feel the way we feel. So we just get on with it. That's the big thing. Oh, I'm just going to get on with it. You know, we don't have enough worth to be like, well, actually there is something wrong, and I am allowed to identify this thing, say it out loud, and actually do something about it to take care of myself, to help me not feel so off. You know, if you really want to, if you're aware of this, then you have in some way experienced a spiritual awakening. But if you want to connect with your guides more, simply just talk to, you know, them and just say, I'm here, please help me, or please, you know, I'd like some guidance, or, you know, whatever it is. And just keep doing that. Like, now I'm really fortunate because I have a sanctuary near my home, and it's like, I think it's the second most known to Lourdes, you know, here in France. It's a Lagué. So I go there on a regular basis, and I light my 9-day candles, which are basically candles that burn for 9 days, and I can hike there from my home. And it's fantastic because I go, I take my time, I talk to my guides in a more structured way, because I'm, you know, lighting my candles. You know, I make it a kind of ceremony for myself. And also it's kind of like a respectful thing. You know, it's respect for them. It's respect for me to actually go, you know, you deserve this time and you deserve the help. Because that's another thing. Sometimes we don't think we deserve the help, or, you know, just there's something wrong with it. It's like, we should be able to just get on with it. Why can't I get on with it? Why am I struggling? Everyone around me seems fine. Yeah. And that's often because people just don't tell the truth. Like, I found in my own circles, they don't tell the truth.
Really?
Just like, I mean, a lot of people, they'll moan about things, they'll complain about things, but they won't fully tell the truth of, you know, like, the real stuff that actually matters.
Mm-hmm.
So you think, oh, it's just me, like, you know, there's something wrong with me, I need fixing.
Yeah, it's hard for me to believe because I'm pretty, I cannot lie. If a friend asks me, how are you? I'm just going to say everything.
Yeah, but a lot of people, they just say, yeah, everything's great, or it's okay, or perhaps there's something not right, but they'll just get on with it. Yeah. There'll be no sense of like, well, this is not okay. And this is why I talk about the sense of rebellion, because it's like, you know, even in society, if we see something that's not right, or, you know, that's why it's like kind of change makers, and we're going to make breakthroughs, because it's like, I see something that is just not right by human nature, whatever it is. And it's having that worth and building that worth to actually make the change and to say, this is not right.
Yeah. And do you, to come back to the guides, do you hear them? Do you feel them? Do you see them?
No, I feel. I have a clairsentience, which is I get a lot of like the chicken skin, you know, like
shivers.
Yeah, shivers. And, you know, when it's very strong, it's like my whole body. Often when I'm kind of holding sessions, it's my legs. But I do a whole, like when I do my soul soothing treatments, you know, where it's kind of like the half day. And when I actually really fully open the space with my clients, that I can't, it's kind of like, it just flows through me. Like there's a big thing about being like an open channel with this, you know, with the work that I do. I mean, that's, when you talk about a healer, like I don't heal, they heal themselves. Yeah. I just kind of provide that space and the information for that to happen. And I know this journey enough now where I meet them where they are, and I know how to kind of guide or point them in the direction, you know, what to look at, how to change perspective. Because that's the other thing I've really noticed is if I say to a client, I could go, well, this is your problem, and this is where you are, and this is how you can solve it. It doesn't work because they have to see it for themselves.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm in the facility where I'm like, point yourself in that direction. Where is that going to take you? And I answer the questions. It's all very much about, don't look for the answers, answer the right questions. Because but you know, when we go on this spiritual path looking for meaning, it's all about finding answers. And I actually got to reverse that and be like, ask the right questions.
Yeah. Also to the guides, right? So that they can answer the right question.
Yeah. But also like guides, like when you really get into it, like you'll understand just in the littlest ways how they support you. You know, and it's like sometimes things can come up and you'll get answers straight away, but it'll come through you and it's like you can't doubt things. Or things take time and you're like, okay, they rolled that one out. You know, that took some time. But, you know, I'm really deep in this work, and like I have my own shaman here, and I've done different healings and things, and I did a healing with her, when was it? September, I think now. And it was crazy. Like, it was like unbelievable what happened. She has animals there, and then we literally saw her dog, and it was my dog, and the cat was like screaming when when we were going through a really deep part of this healing, and she was like, that's not the cat, that's my old cat. It was a different cry, and there was all sorts of things, you know. And it's like, until you're in the work, like you can't really believe it, you know. And that's why I say, it's, you have to practice, you have to do the things to see the magic. Yeah. You know, and that's the magic of being you. You know, it's like the garden. Unless you do the groundwork, you plant the seeds, you nurture them, you know, and you do all the things, it's magic when you see things grow, you know. But the thing is, we're so much concentrating on, well, how am I going to do it? What should I do? You know, that's a huge question. People come to me and they go, what should I do? You know, and that's a totally wrong question to ask. And then when you kind of get that belief, it really is like a magical feeling. So
it is. Yeah, thank you for sharing. And so I didn't say at the beginning, what is your work? You're a holistic healer and a soul gardener.
I kind of obviously, because I'm like, you know, this starts with two big questions. It's like, who am I and why am I here? That's what the spiritual journey, you know, we're kind of told is all about. you know, at one point in my journey when I was really like, you know, who am I? Who am this person? What role do I play? What do I serve? What purpose? Da, da, da. And I really understood that I was a soul gardener because so much of what I've learned is from nature. I practice, you know, in the garden. And I've understood, as I just said earlier, we're part of nature. So what works for nature also works for us. You know, there's so many analogies I could give you about tending to a garden and tending to ourselves, cultivating the garden, cultivating our life. Yeah, so I called myself, still call myself the soul gardener. But as I was saying earlier, a lot of people are like, well, I don't know what that means. Or, you know, when you're in the beginning of this journey, you have no idea it's to do with your soul. You don't have any idea that, you know, you've got a chronic illness because your soul's screaming about, you know, at you. So, you know, I've put on my more, you know, website and everything, holistic healer, because I think people are becoming more accustomed to those terms. Mm-hmm. And they've probably exhausted doctors because you do all that ping ponging for however long, looking for the answers, what's wrong with me? You get thrown, I don't know, however many names of illnesses, diseases, you get all these medications that make you sicker, or you still, maybe you're physically better, but you still feel horrendous in yourself. You're not experiencing life how you wanted to. There's a real incongruence between the inner world and the outer world. And then you go and you go, okay, well, I need to find a healer. So I've kind of gone, okay, let's put healer. And also I am a certified holistic coach. So
Me too. I think we did the same
school. Okay.
This is what you do. And I think you explained beautifully how you work.
Thank you.
I have maybe a couple more things we could get into. You sent me, I think I replied to one of your posts as usual. And then you sent me voice messages and you were saying, you were talking about knowing your worth when you give your energy and nothing comes back. Because I was telling you that, at the beginning of any entrepreneurial journey, you give a lot of energy out and not much comes back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally.
So maybe you want to talk about that?
Well, there's various things here. There's various things. Like, first of all, very much believe, this is my own belief from my own experience, you know, I'd love to hear other people's experiences, but I don't believe, like, if you don't know your worth and you don't know the worth in what you have to share, the efforts you put into sharing it will be futile. And that's the word I think I used on the poll and that you kind of spoke to me about, because you do not put it in its full light. You don't carry it with confidence. You don't, because you're looking at the world in a very different way and you're not convincing people. You know, you're showing thing in a new perspective. You're showing something new.
Yeah.
And people are not convinced. They're like, I get it. Like, oh, it sounds interesting, but I'm not going to invest because you haven't quite convinced me yet. Because you're not totally convinced, because you don't know the worth of it. When you start to really know the worth of it, it's like, going to shout it for the rooftops type of thing, you know. And then also there's that kind of sense of self-worth with regards to as you said about going outwards. So the time maybe you invest in someone, or, you know, even the headspace, you know, because when we have interaction with people, it's not just the interaction itself, it's the headspace, the heart space that we give people, thinking, you know, maybe what about that conversation we had, how could I help that person, what could help them, you know, it's in between the conversation, and especially with this kind of work I do or that you do, and you hold this space and you hold this conversation, it's not just about the exchange of words you have in that moment. You're going away and for a few hours you're going to think about what you said, how perhaps you could have said something differently, what you're going to say to them in the next conversation, maybe you're going to message them again and said, oh, I forgot this, maybe this will help you, you know. And you can invest a hell of a lot of yourself into someone, and you can do that for a period, but even like maybe they're happy to take, but nothing's coming back, you know. So, and that's, you know, whether it's business, financially, or with a friendship, you know, anything, because maybe when you need support, they're not willing to have that space. So and then there's the self-work of like, well, what is mine to do? So I mean, I break this down as well in my the workshop I'm holding next week. So again, it's returning to the analogy of the garden. Specifically for me, I'm talking about the boxes. So, you know, as creators, we're taught to think outside the box. I go reverse and I said, we're going to have to put things in boxes. We're going to have to break this down. We're going to have to say, okay, this is my family box. This is what is mine to do. These are my values. This is what I want to upkeep and keep within your capacity and your boundaries. If something comes into this, it's my responsibility to sort it out, you know? Then again, my work, what is mine to do within my work? You know, and that, and it's deep work within each box, because it's like, well, what is my work values? What means to me, you know, what do I actually want to kind of achieve within my work? And then it's up to you to say, well, I'm not going to go outside. I'm not going to give more of myself in a way than I committed to.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, again, it's being very honest about the capacity that you have. So the capacity that you have, like, if you can't sustainably look after yourself, you've got no place spending so much time on someone else. Not, and that doesn't make you a bad person. It's just, you know, you need to put that kind of oxygen mask on first. And it's the same, you know, but that's how we learn through that kind of people pleasing. And I hate that term, people pleasing, because it didn't mean anything to me for so long. Like, I didn't associate my kind of problem, as it were, with people pleasing. It didn't mean anything to me. And I was like, I just really care. I genuinely care. And I still genuinely care about people. But there's got to be that sense of, I care, but this is the limit to which I care too, because otherwise I'm making myself ill. You know, or I care, but I recognize that the energy I put in to help you is going nowhere, because you're not willing to then take action, or you're not willing to take the time to pause, or whatever it is. But yeah, and I think that's the big problem with this industry, is that the terms which are kind of out there, you only understand when you're at a certain point. So there's a lot of women, you know, or, you know, men as well, but I specifically work with women who are in this really dark a space, who are giving all, I mean, this is from my own experience, they giving all these direction and what to do, but it makes no sense to them, you know. So they're just like, oh, I'm you know, it's a lost cause kind of thing, you know. I'm completely lost. Well, actually they're not, you know. And you have to really feel your way through it. Yeah, there's lots to be said about that as well.
Thank you for for sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of misguidance in this industry, but a lot.
Yeah, but I think also getting older makes you understand yourself better, and automatically, that's kind of what I see for me.
Do you know what? I understand what you mean, but unless you are
doing the work,
unless you've actively signed on to do the work, I don't think age makes a difference. And I'm talking about that from, like, watching my parents just repeat negative pattern after. There is no shift, no change, no awareness, no intention, no nothing.
Yeah.
And, you know, even recent things, I mean, it's really, this is just I'm kind of diverge a little bit. So when you like, I'm obviously showing up online, there's a lot I share about my story, and there's a lot I'm honest about, but there's only a certain amount I can put out there, because then I have to respect other people, you know, within my life that I care about. So I can't be the one who tells their stories. And that's a really, that was a conversation I had yesterday with a friend of mine. And she was like, oh, I found this triggering online and something you put, but we can be really honest. And I said, yeah, but what you didn't see was this perspective. What I didn't share was all this, because I can't, because it's not my story to tell. I'm telling my version of my truth and how I dealt with it, you know, as much as I can. You know, and I've seen this recently with my parents, where now I understand why I never took care of myself before, why I ignored symptoms, why I wasn't capable of, you know, recognizing things, or I pushed through, or I just stuffed things down. You know, that's become a huge, like, there's a huge light shined now. You know, my parents are in their 70s now. So I think age makes a difference if you're committed and aware. I think if you're not, then it doesn't make any difference. You just keep repeating the same thing over and over.
No, for sure.
Yeah. And that, again, is probably another highlight to say, you know, if you are, if this is resonating with you, you know, have courage, because you are here to make changes, you know, because it's the people who go in it, you are here to make a change. You are a change maker. you know, and that's just my little evidence. And I'm sure if people spoke up more, there'd be more evidence. But, you know, have that courage. Know, if you can take any comfort from this conversation, you're not going mad. Just because no one else is hearing what you have to say, or seeing your perspective, it needs to be seen. It needs to be heard.
Exactly. Something else that you said about the entrepreneurial journey, this always into falling into the trap of productivity.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I call it being buried in the business. So this just doesn't apply to entrepreneurs. It's also like creatives in general. And then also those of us who are have been so uncomfortable in our own skin and ill at ease with ourselves, because you're constantly going to the next thing. I'm moving forward. We're always looking for the next thing to, you know, be productive. And because you have no self-worth, your worth comes from how productive you are, how much you've ticked off your list, how much you've got done, whether it's purposeful or served you or not. It's like, I've got a lot done. You get stuck in that productivity. And I call it being buried in the business. And what often happens is the kind of entrepreneurs, and especially solopreneurs, you know, there's a certain amount we have to do for our businesses. And, you know, we go in with that intention awareness of like, you know, I'm going to commit to doing these things. I'm within my capacity. But as you kind of get into that day-to-day rhythm, and then you get into that productive cycle, what often happens is we kind of get trapped in it and we get buried in that business. And then what happens is we lose that sense of meaning and enthusiasm, and everything just goes flat. You know, and then we just carry on, and we're like, oh, I just need to do more. I need to get through this bit. I need to carry on, you know? So yeah, that's what I was talking about, that. And I, you know, when it comes to anything, not just about running your business, going back to that whole kind of joy and happiness, search for the enthusiasm. You know, what is making you feel enthusiastic about life? And so, if you're talking about goal-driven life versus soul-driven life, soul-driven life is very much about being inspired. Goal-driven life is about motivation. So what's pulling you forward? What is pulling you out of yourself? What's helping you remember? So when you're talking about your books, when you read something, it's because it's inspired you. It's not because it's motivated you. It's because it's like, oh, that's helped me remember that part of myself, or it's helped me remember something which I wanted to action, or it's reminded me of someone I wanted to be, you know? That's what overwhelm is all about. We bury ourselves in the business. That's what it is. And we, to kind of combat that, we have to, on a day-to-day basis, be very honest about our capacity. And that's why I say this kind of whole thing of setting goals for, you know, 6 months, 12 months, you know, something could happen this afternoon, or, you know, I could maybe have a bad night's sleep. I'm not in the same capacity tomorrow morning, which means that I have to be really honest about, okay, well, what am I going to get done today? Or, you know, what is my headspace? You know, because when you're doing that kind of true work, you have to be clear-headed, you know? It's like, do I need to sit at my desk this morning, or do I just need to go for a walk? Or, you know, am I in a capacity to hold space for that client? Or can I be very truthful and say, I'm not serving you. I can't serve you this morning because I'm not clear. You know, so it's about kind of knowing your worth to be able to say that to people and say, you know, I'm not going to be any good to you today.
And it's coming back to this, going for the walk and being late, a bit late for your appointment or talk now. And that's also what I wanted to say at the beginning. Of course, we are both flexible, so it works, you know, and it's 10 minutes is nothing. But we are in a world where it's so back-to-back appointments, where it's difficult to have this flexibility and fluidity.
Well, that's also why, where it's going back to the thing of, you don't know what you don't know, and you don't know there is another way, you know, and that's time and time again, when I, you know, when I have my client sessions, they're like, I didn't even know that door was there. I did not know I could be that person. I didn't know I could do it that way. You know, and again, it's that way of doing things. It's the way of being in the world. So it's about finding the different ways. And that's why you have to be really truthful, because it's like, just because everybody does those back-to-back calls in that way, and they think that whatever it is, I'm taking the example of coaching or whatever, is done that way, doesn't mean to say you have to do it that way. You know, you have to be honest about saying, well, is it really realistic for me to take back-to-back calls? Is it realistic for me to sit on Zoom all day long? Does that kill my soul? Does it nourish my soul? when I created Back to You, which is my 6-week program, you know, I got loads of, because I did it within a container, and it was like a course, and it was great because it was like, you know, the person who was running it was great because she's open to new things and everything. And then I sought some help from somebody who was helping with a bit of marketing. And, you know, I had a couple of people who were helping with various things in my business. And were like, I've never seen it done that way before. Like, you know, are you okay with it being like that? But if you're not, we could do it this way. And I think, and I was just like, no, this works for me. Mm-hmm. And then that, if it works for me, I'm going to be much more in the capacity to help them, you know, to support them, because it works for my way of being, works for the way of my life works, you know, for my lifestyle. You know, it's kind of having that courage, again, back to that courage of like, no, this works better for me. You know, this way of eating works better for me. That's a big thing. Like, and then that really shocks me now. Like, I had to completely change the way I ate. Mm-hmm. I have an amazing diet, but I have a very restricted diet in some ways compared to a lot of people. I haven't drunk alcohol, I think, in over 10 years, not because I had a problem with alcohol, but it just, you know, for my health, it didn't agree with me. But then when we go to people's places or we go out to dinner, it's like suddenly like a big thing. Yeah. For people, like, well, how do you manage that? Or how do you
in France?
Or how, you know, what, like, it's kind of like, well, you should just fit in.
Yeah.
You know, or you, and it's like, well, no, because if I do that, I'm going to be in hospital, you know. So it's
so what do you, I'm curious, what do you, how do you because I'm gonna,
yeah, because I can't have I can't eat grains, I can't, you know, and I don't have dairy. I eat very much like a whole food diet. Like, I don't if you're talking about processed food, is the only processed food I eat is probably like a vegan chocolate that I buy, which has got like 4 ingredients.
Clean food.
Yeah, but the thing is, this term has been so like churned through the factory so many times because it's so unique how you have to feed your body. But I don't eat, yeah, basically processed food. But so it's the big thing is the grains. Like, I don't tolerate grains, the dairy. And then I just have to be careful. Like, there's certain like fruits I can't, like oranges, for example, I can't tolerate them. Certain like nightshades or things that are very like, I can eat a little bit of broccoli, but I can't eat a whole plate of broccoli, you know, things like that. So I have to be very aware. But again, it's like a seasonal thing. You know, it's not, you know, in the summer, I'll eat more of this thing. And in the winter, I will eat more, you know, root vegetables or whatever it is. If I'm feeling very much in my head, I'm going to eat like 3 days of root vegetables to ground me. And I also use a lot of herbs, you know, and then I have my whole protocols for my probiotics and vitamins. And I have my herbal store for my teas. And then I go very intuitively. I'm like, well, am I wired? Do I need to be calmed down? Does my stomach need soothing? Whatever it is, you know, and then I'll choose
coffee?
My herbs. I don't drink coffee. No, I don't drink normal tea. I just drink herbal tea, water. And then even things like, you see, juices. So there's a big thing about juicing. And I was heavily into juicing for a long time until I understood actually that was causing a lot of my stomach problems. And I stopped, and then I realized, and then I was like craving some juice, and I was like, I'm going to try. But again, it set my stomach off, you see. So, you know, you have to be really careful about buying into this whole, you know, clean eating and I'm going to be vegan or veg, you know, because you can really disturb your whole system.
Yeah.
And what's right for one isn't right for another.
Yeah.
And again, like how we feel purposeful changes all the time.
Yeah.
How we eat, you know, how we need to eat changes. It's like one day we'll need more water than another day because we've got really dehydrated and it's a hot day. Or, you know, that's why it's kind of so much about being aware. It's like a day-to-day awareness of, they always talk about this journey of discovery, and you've seen, I don't know, thousands of posts now on Instagram about, it's not a linear journey. And you see this kind of graphic that goes up and down, or it's the steps. It's not even that. This journey is a choreography. And it's funny, because I was talking to someone in DMs the other day about it, and I'd written something, and I think I'm going to revamp it as a blog post now. And I think back in like 2015, about this dance, about this kind of choreography of all the different elements that go into this kind of way of living and being. You've got to kind of be in harmony with so many different things. It's very much orchestrated. And that takes so much awareness and, dare I say it, discipline. You know, and I think when people kind of, you know, look at this way of living, and like, they have a certain vision of, you know, the woman in white and yoga, and, you know, it's kind of total abandonment and everything. I personally, I don't even practice yoga. There's many reasons I don't practice yoga.
Why? Like,
oh, I've got loads of different reasons, but one particular reason is there's a lot of yoga postures which are actually extremely bad for your back.
Yeah,
and I've actually had to do a whole, I've been 3 years now with my chiropractor for structural realignment. It's a new technique called ABC treatment.
Because you used to practice yoga?
No, I think I've done maybe 2 yoga classes in my life. But it's something that didn't, because I was, you have to remember as well, I've been on a big healing journey. I was physically very unwell. Like, I was really physically, I mean, I could barely get out of bed, but I pushed myself. Like, I mean, when I think now, it's crazy, like how ill I was. And I was looking after 2 young kids on my own. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's the point. I pushed myself to literally ending up in hospital, you know, so I know this inside out, you know, and it's like with the, that's a personal choice for me. Some people who don't have any structural problems, their spine is aligned, you know, which is very rare, you know, they have amazing, like, and I have total respect for, you know, I see some amazing like yoga teachers and people who put yoga out there. It's, I really find it beautiful, but it's not something that works for me, you know?
Yeah, that's also so you good have you to, share yeah, that, yeah.
But I don't like that whole kind of thing, a persona of, you know, well, if I'm a healer, you know, not all wise women live in the woods. You know, it's like, well,
yeah.
And that's also why it took me so long to claim who I was, because I'm like, well, I don't know you, and I don't do this, and I don't look this way, and my days aren't like this, and blah, 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 you know. And it's like, until I really understood the concept of what being a healer was, you know, and it takes so much unraveling and folding. And like we said, you'll learn these things when you're ready for them.
Yeah.
You know, you can't, it's just something you can't rush, and it's being at peace with the pace. Yeah. Which your journey unfolds, you know, that's the whole, again, the maîtrise is very, you know, and that's why, like, this journey very much, you can tell how you're progressing. It's the pace at which you move through life, which is why we then go back to that way of being, you know, that presence, being present, being able to be present. Because if you're constantly like moving 100 miles through life, you're never going to be present. Your presence isn't felt. You know, it's very much about when you walk in a room, how do you make people feel? You don't have to open your mouth. You know, like I, when you're in front of me on the screen, you make me feel a certain way, you know? And I've understood that when I enter a room, I'd like my presence to feel soothing in some way, you know? But also have that kind of touch of rebellion. So it's like, you know, I'm like soothing, but soothing to the point where, you know, you can feel like I'm okay. It's okay to be me, you know? But honestly, I mean, I could talk about this for hours. There's so many different things that we could get into and talk around, because it's life. This is life, you know? It's like, there's so much to delve into, and I've accumulated so many different, you know, how do you say, ways of seeing things and different perspectives on things. It's been so long now I've been at this. But that's another thing I find hard, like personally, like we talk about business, I find it hard to put myself out there and just start talking about things. This is why I love these conversations, because it's kind of like prompts, you know, it's like, okay, talk about this, got no problem. Yeah. But for me to put myself out there, I do find it difficult. That's one thing I generally struggle with, trying to get better at it. But
I think you're doing a good job on the Insta stories.
Thank you.
I just wanted to, because I know a lot of yoga teachers, because I used to teach yoga, and a lot of my friends are yoga teachers or into yoga. So, and I had to stop for 4 years because of my back, and I came back to it only this year, last year. And so I'm curious, and it's, you know, I think it's great feedback what you're giving. And that's why I'm asking you, what else do you find not okay in yoga? You said some postures. And
Definitely. What else? Big things are the postures that are going to affect the spine alignment, and then obviously the rest of your body, the way the bodily functions. Then for me, it was very much just about the physical energy it took. And I know there's very gentle yogas and everything. And then you can go really more deeper into that whole thing of, I didn't have time, you know, which is a whole other conversation, which is a very former version of me where I would never make time to do those things.
Yeah.
So, and that's the same with, you know, when people with coming to me with work, I don't have time. Yeah. I don't have time to do that program. I don't have time to take an hour for myself. I don't have time to invest in myself. And the hard truth is, if you never give yourself the time of day, you never invest in yourself, how can you expect anyone else to give you the time of day? You're going to constantly feel misunderstood if you're not being present with yourself and sitting with yourself and going, okay, what do you have to tell me?
Yeah.
You know? So that's what I'm saying, like the yoga thing, it's me and my personal journey. You know, there's all the different factors why I never got into practicing yoga. Currently, it's very much the overriding thing is for the structure, because I'm working on the structure, physical structure of my body, this treatment actually is the only chiropractic treatment that does it, where it actually pulls the vertebrae backwards. So our bodies are self-correcting. The only one thing the body cannot do is pull a vertebrae backwards. So, it's been 3 years now, and it's been an amazing journey. And it's also, you know, the spine, we can talk about loads of things to do with the chakras and, you know, the channeling and everything. But my whole journey is unfolded in all different ways, and definitely combined with that treatment, it's been amazing.
Do you think so, this realignment of the spine?
Oh, totally.
Made you able to channel
all different
more?
Things, all different things. Yeah. Because it's kind of, you know, I mean, you have to experience it to believe it, honestly. Like, I could sit here and talk about many things, but the proof is in the pudding. Like, I've seen myself unfold. But it's a combination. So I'm saying it's a choreography. If I'd have just done that and been completely, like, my chiropractor, she says she's got a colleague who does the same thing as her, but she's not connected in any way. So she just does it very mechanically. Mm. Whereas my chiropractor, she actually has attracted, because she is connected, a lot of women like me who are in the kind of healing realms and everything. So it's really interesting. But again, as I say, you have to have all these elements in place. It's like the garden. You know, you need the sun, you need the rain, you need the good soil, you need the fertilizer, you need the animals, you need the insects, you need the worms, you need, you know, and if something's missing, you know, things don't, you know, thrive, or something has to overcompensate, or, you know, that's why a lot of people perhaps now they overcompensate with their diet, but they don't do something else, or, you know, so it's just day to day checking in, and, you know, what's the weather going to be like today?
Yeah, not so good. No, I'm kidding. For you, good, probably. It's always sunny where you live.
Today is sunny, actually, but it's been gloomy for a few weeks now. But it is really? Today is a beautiful day. Yeah, we've had like this kind of, the whole climate, this winter has been a perfect example of how the climate change is affecting the earth. I mean, my fruit trees are in flower. It was like yesterday morning I left the Monaco. No, not yesterday morning, so Tuesday morning I left Monaco around 8:45. It was already 17 degrees. Last night we ate outside of a restaurant. Wow. I mean, ridiculous.
Yeah.
Ridiculous, you know.
So one other question I wanted to ask, when you were saying, when you go to people's places and it's a big deal that you don't drink alcohol.
Yeah.
How do you then respond?
I think I'm so, because I'm so sure of myself. That's what I'm saying. It's very much about work. Like, you're not going to coerce me. You're not going to, like, my husband is half Italian. You know, he's grown up in the restaurant business. We used to have our own restaurant. Mm. We used to have a wine bar. We used to have, like, I think 120 labels on our wine list. He absolutely detests that I do not drink and that I do not share wine with him. And I feel so sorry in the sense that, you know, I'd love to share that with him.
Yeah.
But I'm so just like, no.
Yeah.
I think people are just, they don't question it. I'm just like, mm. I don't drink, you know? Yeah. And I think that's what I'm saying. You've got to get that point where it's like, what I feel, how I feel is more important than you telling me that I, you know, that I should be that way, you know? And, mm. I see that a lot, especially with alcohol, actually, funny enough, which is a bizarre thing. You know, people go, I'll just have one more. I'll just have, you know, mm-hmm. or, you know, and, but I just know that that's something that doesn't work for me. But I know it so strongly that I'm just like such a firm no that I think people are like, okay. You know, they don't go there. My husband's still like at Christmas, he had this really nice bottle of wine. He's like, oh, I haven't got anyone to share it with. And why is it on? I'm like, and, you know, and not in a nasty way, but it's like, you're not going to budge me on something I know mm-hmm. is going to make me inherently, you know, more compassionate person to you as well. If I feel rubbish, I'm not going to be a nice person to be around.
Yeah, that's, you know, totally. But I think it's hard for me. It's not hard for me in social situations. I mean, I drink sometimes, but not very much. Usually not also, but I will just do how I feel, like, you know, that day. Do I feel like drinking? No or yes, and then I will decide. And I feel that in the relationship with the partner, it's another level of trickiness.
Well, that's the thing where it's like, am I going to please you? I mean, okay, and that, seriously, that could be an episode in itself, because it's the relationship thing is a whole other subject, but it's so much part of it. But you know, I met my husband when I was 18 years old. I'll be 44 this year.
Wow.
And
you know, congratulations, being,
like, the real man of my life. Like, you know, we married in the early 2000s, and I'm not the same person obviously that I was when I was 18. And when I was 18, I was in the midst of just hell. And of course, there was so much, well, I'll be this person to please you. I'll do this because I know it will please you. But I didn't know, obviously, that's what it was then. I'll do this so you accept me. I'll do this so you're not going to reject me.
Yeah.
I'm going to do this so that you make me feel safe about myself. I'm going to spend the day doing something I don't enjoy just so I'm with you, whatever it is, you know. And it's really hard, because when you spend that so long with somebody, when you stop doing something because you know it's better for you, they see that as rejection as well, or they see it as you changing. Oh my God, like, I mean, I'm so grateful for where we are now. God knows where we'll be in another 6 months, but there were many times where I didn't think my marriage would last. Like, I just didn't, I was like, it's just not going to, you know, it's not going to last. And a lot of people, it's, you know, who were in my kind of inner circle, like, why'd you stay? Because it got so dark at one point. I was like, because I have this inner knowing that, you know, we're supposed to be together. And, you know, and it was kind of like, so I can give you a little bit of a, like, a example of before. But that was also because he was at the restaurant and I was at home. I did everything at home, like everything was my, everything, the kids, everything home or responsibility, even though I did go to work in the restaurant as well. Not obviously not him. He was full-time restaurant. I did a bit of both, whereas he did the work, you know, and there was nothing at home. It was all my responsibility, to the point where, you know, if he did do anything, I was like really uncomfortable, or it was just like, you know, it was kind of like, oh no, things are out of my control now. Like, I needed to do the things, because then it was so much for me to carry that I was like, I need to tick off the list in this way and have this routine. Otherwise I'm completely out of control. You see what I mean? And then through my own journey, we kind of went through a period where it was this kind of like void, where I actually, like I said at the beginning of the conversation, I kind of, or even before the recording, I detach myself from everything, everyone, the world, everything. to do so much of this deep inner work. But it also that meant detaching from him. And it was really hard because he didn't understand that I was suffering so much. I was struggling so much because he didn't get it. Like, he still doesn't understand my work now. I think slowly, slowly he's starting to get it. But he's like, why, you know, we're a monarchy. He's like, you speak three languages. Why didn't you just go and be a state agent? You know, and you could earn loads of money. He doesn't get that this is very much, you know, my calling. And so, of course, for so long, there was so much like, yeah, I'll drink the wine. Yeah, we'll go here. Yeah, we'll spend the day here. Yeah, we'll spend 2 hours in the car now with the kids and the screaming. Yeah, I'll go to bed late and then not sleep the night because, you know, there was all sorts. And then it was like, no.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that. No. You know, and it was hell because he was just like, who are you? You've gone mad. Like, he would say to me, you're crazy. You've gone crazy. What, like, what's wrong with you? You know, and then you're questioning your own craziness.
Exactly. You
know? Yeah. And then you kind of have this turning point where the same thing, you're so firm on your feet that nothing can rock you. You know, you're so like, no, because you kind of flip to the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And then they see that solidness in you and they're like, okay, so maybe this is the way things are going to be now. And now, like, he does so much more than before. In the home or whatever it is, you know, it's like this morning, like he went, he said, oh, we need some fruit. I'll go, you know, I said, well, go to the market, buy the fruit. That would never have happened before. It would never, I would have just like struggled through the day, do my things. And then it would be like, right, I've got to get that at the end of the day. And then, you know, my whole day would just be crammed. I'm like, yeah, you get the fruit. He's like, well, what do I buy? I'm like, well, go and have it in the cupboard. You get whatever you want, you know? Yeah. And you're kind of like, now I'm just like,
whatever.
What will be, you know?
Yeah.
But it's unimaginable before that I would have got to that stage in any way. And I think because he's seen me, because before I would question myself as well, I was like, oh, he doesn't love me and I'm wrong. And, you know, and it's funny because I saw something, and I don't know if it's an actual book or whether it was a montage, but it was like narcissism or toxic love. Oh, no, sorry. No. Narcissism or... what was it? Something to do with comparison, narcissism and lack of self-worth. It was something like that, whatever it was. And I was like, that really resonated with me because, like, there's so many times, like, I've heard myself, I'm saying, like, you're a narcissist. And then he would say to me, you're a narcissist, you know? And it was just, like, this really toxic, like, we went through so horrible. It was, like, tar. It was so dark. It was horrible, you know? And I would be scared to say things or scared of my point of view or scared of my perspective because I genuinely like the man of my life. And, you know, and I was like, I want him to see me and I want him to understand me and I don't want to be rejected, you know, but I kept sticking to myself. And now, okay, we're totally, we don't see eye to eye on everything. And there's a lot of things where he can be like really like pick, you know, criticized to try and wobble me. But we're in a whole different space now. So I think with a partner, it's like, if they're the person for you, you ride these things out. You can have some really, like, even with a friendship. I mean, how many friendships have you lasted, like, the span of, like, 30 years, you know, and it's all been, one, have they actually lasted, and two, has it all been roses? You know, so when you're in a marriage and you've had kids and you've had deaths and you've had money problems or you've built a life or you've built a house or whatever it is, I mean, you're going to go through some stuff and you're going to be tested and, you know, it's a lot.
It is. And American movies don't talk about that.
Oh, no. Oh, my God. And it's so funny as well mentioning that because we were watching some movies at Christmas.
Yeah.
And I remember growing up and seeing those houses in American gang. That's going to be my life one day. I'm going to have this house and I'm going to feel safe.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a neighborhood and my kids are going to ride a bike outside. And then it was like, I had my kids and it was nothing like how I thought it was going to be. And nothing was how I'd expected. And I was like, what is this shit?
Yeah.
No, it was like, okay, I realized that, you know, expectations. And that's why now I'm so like, okay, let's not put the expectations. And that's often, you know, the women I work with, I think I've got it written in my website, you know, it's about being, unburying yourself from the weight and the pressure of those expectations. So the expectations you have of life, the expectations you put on yourself, and then the expectations you think others have of you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why marriage is the whole thing, because you go into this marriage and that you're a certain person and then you evolve, you change, you become a new version of yourself. And then it's like, okay, you're not who I expected you to be. But if it's a true connection, you'll ride those things out and the time will tell. I mean, I think some, you know, generally some people aren't spaced together, they split up. But I think now a lot of people do perhaps split before they go to that tipping point, you know. I could have easily walked away from my marriage many times the last couple of years, you know, but there was just something saying to me, don't, you know. So who knows what happened the next 6 months? I don't know. The next year, 5 years, we don't know, you know. So, and even it's, even as being a mother with my kids, you know, that's been a huge journey. My, you know, my son, especially, it's been, it's like a daily thing. He hasn't, I don't, I mean, we had a very difficult birth. There was a lot of birth trauma. And then, you know, things here were very difficult, different, sorry, back then. And there was whole conversations around autism. And then there was a conversation around giftedness. But it was all like another, it's like I went on this journey because of him. That's what I'm saying. He broke me open because you know, we were inquiring about who he was. And through that, I had to identify who I was. You know, so I learned a lot about my neurodivergency from him. Because he's no doubt, but that comes with, you know, huge amounts of high sensitivity. And, you know, I'm dealing with my own regulations whilst having to deal with two small people who I've got no idea what's going to happen at the end of the day. Tuesday night, you know, I had to deal, I actually had a calm day. Then I dealt with like an hour and a half meltdown on Tuesday night. And by the time I went to bed, you know, I was like this, you know, my hands are shaking. You know, and then you, that's what I'm saying, you don't know the emotional journey you're going to go through, because in my head I was like, I've had a good day, I'm going to go to bed early next day, you know. And I didn't, I went to bed, I probably didn't have 5 hours sleep because my husband woke up with anxiety, he was very stressed because he's got a lot on his plate, you know. So you cannot predict those things.
So
but anyway, I've rambled on.
Thank you so much. And maybe I hope I release this podcast before your workshop. Maybe you want to talk a tiny bit about that.
So the workshop, it's called Take a Step Back. So, you know, I think you've kind of understood about my perspective, or at least got a taster of how I work and how I kind of support people. But yeah, I'm hosting a workshop on January the 16th. It's a virtual workshop. And it's very much about understanding what needs to be tended to this year. So as we were talking, you know, at the beginning of the year, it's all about goal setting, planning. And we've kind of, I think we've sifted through that. That's perhaps, you know, not the best way for somebody who wants to be more intentional about their well-being, the way they move through the world. And also, you know, when you are in this state of healing, you know, if you've woken up to the fact that actually all that stuff's not really working for you, and you're not experiencing the world how you want to. So in this workshop, what I'm going to be doing is providing that space for you to sit with yourself and to meet yourself where you are. So that means like, okay, before I take on anything new, before I take action, who am I already? What already do I have on my plate? What have I already created? And then being very realistic about the capacity you have, what needs tending to. And then with regards to making a vision, it's very much about like, okay, there's nothing wrong with having a vision, there's nothing wrong with having dreams, goals. What it is about, say, okay, well, the timing, the pacing, the same with the book. The book is there. I'm going to, first of all, these are my priorities. So my son, for example, has big exams coming up this year. He has the Brevet Blanche, which is like, you know, the mock that I think is at the end of this month. I have to be very aware to make space for that, for the meltdowns, whatever it is, you know. so you have to be like, what is there now before I start to, you know, it's like the garden, my garden. And I'm going to actually, funny enough, I'm going to be doing a post about this later. My garden now is very much in its winter state. It's been unkept. Before I start thinking, I'm going to plant this, I'm going to plant new seed, I'm going to have to do the groundwork in the garden. I'm going to have to do the weeding. I have to take the old plants out before I even think about doing anything else. So that's the work we're going to do in the workshop. It's going to be very honest about who am I already? What state am I in? What do I already have on my plate? And then we move forward. But we go forward with meaning. It's very different because a goal is very much like,
heady.
It's not, exactly. It's like, you know, whereas this is like, oh, I feel meaningful already. I feel purposeful already. It's not like, oh, I'm going to achieve the goal. You know, it's like my day to day is very much giving me meaning and purpose without having to think, oh, in 6 months, I'll have the book or, you know. And you feel more cared for. That's the thing. When you're caring for something, you're nourishing those deep needs, you automatically feel that meaning of life.
So that's the workshop. It sounds really good.
So I have the workshop, and then I'm actually going to be doing the live launch of the 6-week program. So if you come to the workshop, I also have, I'm going to be doing like special bonuses for the people who come to the workshop to lead into the program. And then there's other ways to work with me. I have a monthly women's circle because I wanted to make my work accessible. So that's the easy, you know, the most affordable way is the monthly women's circle. And then I obviously have my one-to-one sessions. And they're kind of like when you need them, you know, because this work is very much about, you know, you can't rush it. You can't say, okay, for 3 months, we're going to have this time. It doesn't work that way. Yeah. And then if you're local to me, I have my in-person sessions as well.
So you do online and in-person. It works.
My in-person is very much like a holistic treatment.
Yeah.
First of all, you know, we start the session, depends whether it's an old or a new client. We start the session by talking. And then actually we go through a ceremony of a foot bath. So I use herbs and Epsom salts and oils for the foot bath. And then, you know, there's a whole kind of cocooning that happens during that time with, you know, warm towels and, you know, all the oils. And then we do a bit of a kind of letting go ceremony during that time. And then we go to kind of my treatment room, and I do like an energy healing, and I use sound, I use stone, and I use plants, but like burning. And then I kind of tune in, and that's where I do kind of this work where I do more channeling and give guidance. And then, you know, often what happens with like Reiki or whatever like that, you just go away. That's it. The treatment's done. But I take the time where, you know, because during the reading I do, I get the guidance, and I also do oracle cards. And then together we will then set the intentions that you go away with. And it's like you kind of get your homework, as it were, what I call the groundwork. So it's like action these things. So you actually go away with responsibility and focus and direction. It's not just that you go for this healing thing, you feel completely unempowered, even though you might feel better. You go away from it, and it's like maybe that feeling lasts for an hour, half a day. And with this, you actually go away, and it's like, well, I've actually got something to, you know, get my hands into.
Nice. Yeah. Sounds amazing. I will come visit next time I go down south.
Yes. With pleasure.
Thank you so much for the nice conversation and great wisdom you brought this morning. This afternoon.
Transitioned. We've gone the flip side in the whole conversation. But thank you as well. Thank you for hosting me. It's been a pleasure. And I do hope, you know, when you said wisdom, I do hope that you know, the listeners have, there's something that resonates, and that there's something that they can carry away with them.
I'm sure. Thank you all for listening.